Hello there, and you're very welcome to the programme. Wishy Fogarty, as usual, with you until 7 o'clock. This is a pre-recorded programme, and my guest this evening is a Cockburn man who has spent all his life up in County Antrim. He's been deeply, deeply involved in the St. Gall's Club up there on the Falls Road, and indeed, he is the man responsible for a wonderful club history, Clonard to Croke, the history of the St. Gall's GA Club, which won a McNamee Award lately, and of course, St. Gall's won the All-Ireland Club Championship in recent years. We'll be talking about that. Tony Welch, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you, Wishy. It's great to be here. Thank you. Looking forward to meeting you, and I'm here and we'll chat and talk about whatever you want to say to me, and we'll argue and whatever it is. Go on.
Anytime you're down from Antrim, come to Kerry, you tune into Radio Kerry Latcher, tell me.
I do indeed, yes, and I've agreed with you and I've disagreed with you in my own mind, and I have lots of people in Boherby, especially in Keith's Bar in Boherby, the likes of Patrick Keating and Phil Sullivan and different people like that who would... are very keen students of Kerry football, and but they're even more keen students of Cork football, I think. And they were very upset there recently when Kerry lost the All-Ireland, but we'll say no more about that for the moment anyway. No.
By the way, I wouldn't have met you only for Kathleen Murphy. Tell us about Kathleen.
That's right.
Who's the wife of the late Freddie Murphy, great athlete, great footballer who died 2 years ago there. But only for Kathleen, I wouldn't have met you.
Yes, I first met Kathleen actually back in 1983, I think it was. I was working with the Department of Education as a schools inspector, and... Kathleen's school, the presentation in Killarney, was one of the schools that was involved in an action research project that we were doing in terms of developing inter-cert history at that particular time. And Kathleen was one of the schools involved, and I discovered her as one of the great history teachers in the entire country. Killarney was very lucky to have somebody like Kathleen Murphy teaching history over the years, and now that she's retired, I'm sure she'll be able to give something back in other ways as well. But Kathleen, a great person, and as you say, Wishy, her husband Freddie, a character as well, and an East Kerry man, and indeed born not too far away from where my uncle Joe Minahan lived there in Shinnagh as well. So great person, Kathleen.
Yeah, and Latimer St. Freddie, I remember running with him on the roads. He was great, big into the running. We used to run together up to Kilcommon and around, and he trained Glenn Flesk, and of course he was a great athlete himself. May the sod rest lightly on him. You're a Corkman yourself. How did you tell us about your background? Because you've a strong Kerry background, and how did you land up to Antrim?
Yes, well, my mother was from Coombe in Guineaguilla, and she married into... Rahul Moore Boherby. She married Ger Welsh there, and I was one of there's three boys and a girl. Paddy, my brother, actually is over in New York at the moment. He'd probably be listening into this particular program actually, and I have a brother Joss there in Boherby, and my sister Bridget is over in Liscarroll, and I was recruited by the De La Salle brothers to join up and kind of play football and hurling. And I went to the college in Mallow back in 1955 or thereabouts. And I spent a year there. And then I moved on to Castletown in Laois. And then I moved to, then in 1959 it was actually, I think, I moved to an all-Irish school in Tuck Aylin down in Waterford. It's actually the Fate Leg House Hotel at the moment, a very grandiose place. And then I found myself having qualified there teaching children in Ballyfermot in Dublin in 1961. And in fact, I was the first day I went there was a Saturday, and the following day was the 3rd of September 1961, where I went to the All Ireland between Dublin and Tipperary, in hurling, an All Ireland actually that Tipperary won. And my abiding memory of that actually is there were twins who were playing for Dublin at that particular time. There were the Bootman twins, mm-hmm. Achill Bootman and Bernie Bootman. And my other memory of that, of course, is of Jimmy Doyle playing full forward and taking a free from 21 yards out and putting it so far out of the ground that was unreal, that sort of thing. So I was there, and I was in Ballyfermot teaching, and then I went to UCD for 3 years or so. And when I qualified, I found myself doing an additional qualification up in Belfast, in St. Joseph's College of Education, actually in Belfast, and as a postgraduate. And that was quite an interesting experience, because I was meeting people from the north of Ireland for the first time, people from Derry and Tyrone and places like that. Now, we were all postgrads. And indeed, one memory I have of that actually is the first day we went in to sit in the lecture hall. This very overbearing lecturer came along, and he was giving his first lecture to us. Now, we were all postgrads. We were all graduated from various universities, and his opening words were, he said, ignorance, he said, ignorance, no matter how many letters it has after its name, never impresses me. So that was my introduction to St. Joseph's College of Education. And by one of the strange ironies of life, 30 or more years later, actually, that place was closed down. And the school that I was teaching in, St. Genevieve's School in West Belfast, St. Genevieve's School relocated itself in that very same building. And in actual fact, I retired from St. Genevieve's School out of that same building, having been forced in it in 1967 or thereabouts, you know. So it the wheel came full circle as far as that was concerned. And I spent most of those years actually teaching in West Belfast, with the exception possibly from 80 to 86, when I was a Kigara scholar travelling for An Ryanair Dhocash and selling education throughout the 26 counties. And that in itself was an interesting experience as well. Maybe we'll come back to that some other time, maybe.
We will indeed. Now, how did you land in the Falls Road? How did you land in St. Gall's?
Yes, well, having been with the De La Salle brothers at the time, you were at the mercy of wherever they decided to send people. And I don't know why they saw any qualification for me to go there, but I found myself sent there at any rate. And I was appointed, first of all, actually, having completed my postgrad education, as I mentioned already, in St. Joseph's College of Education, I was sent down to South Armagh, in actual fact. I was in Cady in South Armagh, and I was teaching in a primary school there. And I was enjoying every minute of it, and playing football with Cady Dwyers, a mighty football Armagh team at that particular time. And in actual fact, I played in the Armagh County Final in 68, I think it was, in the Armagh Hurling County Final. We were beaten by Tiernanogue, I think, from Portadown. And that year also, I actually played in the, I think it was the Division 3 League Final, interestingly enough, against a team called Ballymacnab, who I noticed last Sunday or thereabouts were beaten by Crossmaglen in the Armagh Final. So I had experience of playing football in South Armagh, and it was fairly basic, I can tell you, at that particular stage. One of my memories of that match between Cady and Ballymacnab was a schmozzle, as Micheál O'Hare would say, a schmozzle developed at some half of the match, because Cady were leading by 4-3 or something like that. And the only way in which it could be sorted out was the parish priest to come in from the sideline, brandishing an umbrella and scattering people right, left and centre, and helping the referee to get order again. But that was South Armagh football at that particular time. And then having been there, all of a sudden I got a directive to go back to Belfast again, which is where I found myself on the Falls Road, in actual fact, teaching in a secondary school there called La Salle Secondary School.
Were the La Salle brothers very strong up around there, Tony? They were talking that they played a huge part in the development of the young people there.
They did. They had two schools in Belfast, actually, but they had three schools then, subsequently three schools. They were very much involved in primary education. St. Gall's School, which we'll be coming back to again, but St. Gall's School, which was founded in 1901, was founded by the De La Salle brothers, and there was a school also. That was just off the Falls Road, in a place called Clonard, hence the title of the book, subsequently from Clonard to Croke, beside Clonard Monastery. So they had one school there, and then they had another school further down the road, actually down near the city of Belfast, the centre of the city of Belfast, called St Finian School. And then in the 1960s, they founded, when secondary education began to become more popular in that part of Belfast, they founded a secondary school called La Salle Secondary School. And that, in fact, is still up and running in a big way and has been really a conveyor belt for Antrim hurling and football, and also very much involved in the production of players for St Gall's as well.
Now, so what's your first choice of music?
My first choice of music takes me back to where my mother came from, in Guineguilla, and it's by a man who spent many a night playing the box all over Slieve Lucre, from Ballydesmond to Rathmore, and particularly Knocknagree. Anything by Johnny O'Leary would do the job.
And you're very welcome back to this pre-recorded programme. I'm talking to Tony Welsh, who was a member of the St. Gall's Club above in Antrim all his life, and he wrote a fabulous history from Clonard to Croke, which won the McNamee Award, and of course that great club, St. Gall's, that he was a member of, are also All-Ireland champions. Tony, we'll talk about St. Gall's, because they came from nowhere really, and they achieved the ultimate, winning the All-Ireland Club title.
They did indeed, Wishy, yes. They were founded back in 2010 by a group of students from St. Gall's Primary School, which we'd been talking there a moment ago about. And these people were standing around corners of streets, and they decided, Antrim at that particular time had great football teams. They actually won a three-in-a-row Ulster senior football at that particular time. And these boys standing at the corner of the street, I suppose they wanted basically to sort of try and emulate the heroes of that time. They persuaded the principal of the school, a man called Brother Albius Ryan, whose family originally came from hospital in County Limerick. And in fact, his grandnephew is still there, actually, a man called Michael Ryan, whom I was lucky enough to interview for the book. Now, the club, as I say, was founded in the year 1910. There were Fanning family involved in the founding it, and also, and in particular, a Sheehan family involved in this. Now, the Sheehans had originally come from Buttevant in Cork, and the Sheehans were well and big into the licensed trade in Belfast, which really was the only way in which a Catholic could kind of get to the top in the world of business, was by being involved in the license and spirits trade. And that Sheehan family were involved in it. One of them in particular, a man called Harry Sheehan, who won three or four, actually five. He captained Antrim in a three-in-a-row Ulster Championship. He played in three or four All-Ireland between football and hurling, and was also a great athlete. And he was a son of the man who came from Cork. And his son actually, or his great-grandson, was involved in St. Gall's more recent exploits when they were involved in the intermediate hurling All-Ireland final. Because I should say to you, Wishy, that St. Gall's in 2010, not only did they contest and win the senior club football, but they also contested the intermediate All-Ireland hurling final 3 weeks before they won the All-Ireland club football. And one of that Sheehan family was playing cornerback in that intermediate hurling team in 2010 as well. They were beaten by St. Lachlan's Kilkenny, actually.
Now, the team that won the All-Ireland, what year was it again?
2010.
In 2010, the team that won the club All-Ireland. Of course, it's a dream for every club. I'd love to see my own club, Killarney Legion, sometime doing it, but I doubt if I'll be alive to see that at the moment. Mm-hmm. But there was Kerryman involved in the club, wasn't there, up there? And one particular Kerryman trained a lot of those young fellas, set up the system that was eventually to win the All-Ireland. So once again, a Kerryman, not a Cockman, spreading the gospel up around Antrim.
That's very, very true, actually. His name is his brother Christopher Kelleher, actually, and he lives out the road, or he originally came from out the road here, Tullaha, and a mighty Kerry man in every sense of the word. Now, he was teaching in St. Finian School in Belfast, and subsequently then he was transferred to Downpatrick, but he basically gave the best years of his life in terms of developing those boys who, and there's a photograph there in the book of a third, when they were in third class, a team which was there, which he was involved in. And of that team of 15 in third class, 8 of them went on to win the All-Ireland. And that, Brother Christopher Kelleher there, he was very deeply involved in them right through, and there's no doubt about it, and you're correct in saying this, Weeshie, that if Kerry have won senior All-Irelands, they had a very much a deep involvement in terms of St. Gall's winning a senior club All-Ireland as well. No doubt about it. A mighty Killarney man, so he was. He's retired now. A good friend of mine, and definitely, and is president, actually, of St. Gall's at the moment. And
does he come to Kerry, Tony?
He does indeed, yes. In actual fact, he had spent a lifetime. He's just retired now, and he'd spent a lifetime looking forward to meeting the Kerry team when they came home after winning the All-Ireland. And he'd planned this year to come down on the Monday to meet them in Killarney. Now, whether he came down or not, I'm not absolutely sure, but he's back and forth all the time, yes, and he's very much involved in coming around Killarney, and he's lots of friends and his relations live here and so on.
A great story. Now, what other Kerry men have been involved in the club up there, to your knowledge?
Well, there's one man, I suppose, who really, in a sense, strides the history of St. Gall's Club from the 1950s onwards. He's a man known in religion as a brother Leopold Spillane. He was Dominic Spillane, his family name. The Spillanes, his family came from Loch Gitane. And his father, actually, a man, Ned Spillane, Eamon Spillane, he played for Crokes in Killarney. And he went on to win 2, if not 3 All-Irelands, I think, with Kerry. Certainly he won one in 1913. He was in his heyday, actually, I suppose, as a footballer back in 1908 and 9 or thereabouts. And to the best of my knowledge, he won an All-Ireland at that particular time. And he was one of the great footballers of that particular, and I think, if my memory serves me correctly, related to the Spillanes, Patton, that crowd, as far as I'm told.
So, you know? Now we're talking about his son.
We're now talking about his son, Brother Leopold Spillane, exactly right. As I say, he came to Belfast in the late 1940s, and he brought with him, St. Gall's up to that point, I suppose, would mainly be known as a hurling club, but he really, in a sense, moved them from hurling to, obviously, his own native game. He moved them to football and, in a sense, developed them as a football team. Now, it was a slow, tortuous process because St. Gall's were very much in the 50s and the 60s and, indeed, into the early 70s, the poor relation of football in Antrim. And what Brother Spillane did, in actual fact, was to found a youth club, which he called St. Gall's Youth Club, because he was teaching in St. Gall's Primary School just off the Falls Road there, as I mentioned already. He developed, and this youth club, in a sense, became the basis for, if you like, a lot of the groundwork which was done there. It was done in basketball, it was done in the various sort of indoor games, activities and so on. But he channeled these people towards St. Gall's GAC. He himself then became president of St. Gall's Club, and really, in a sense, he was a huge influence in the club over the years. Now, his nickname as he strode up the Falls Road was Big Kerry. He was Kerry to the bone, so he was. And, you know, I've been saying to people that if St. Gall's were playing Kerry in the All-Ireland final, I think I'm not sure how he could decide which team he would support. But definitely a mighty, mighty Kerry man, so he was.
Where is he buried, Tony?
He's buried, actually, up in Milltown Cemetery. He's buried not very far. There's a plot there which De La Salle brothers are buried in, and it's an actual fact. If anybody's ever up in Milltown Cemetery in Belfast and they see where the Republican plot is, it's just about maybe 20 or 30 yards further over on the right-hand side.
Lovely story about Big Kerry. Now, there was another Kerry man, and his brother, of course, later on became president of the GAA. That's Sean Kelly's brother. And Sean had a brother, Lartimer Sin, who was also deeply involved and played with Shee up there and played football.
He did indeed, yes. That's brother Patrick Kelly, Padraig Kelly. Brother Patrick was up there, and he was in the training college, St. Joseph's Training College, actually, and he was there for 3 years. And because he was with the De La Salle brothers, and the De La Salle brothers with their sort of their deep involvement in St. Gall's club, it was natural enough that he would play for St. Gall's club, which he did in the 1970s. I think we shift from about 71 to 73 or 4 or thereabouts. And he was a mighty footballer. He played left half back for St. Gall's, and he brought to the team. Now remember, this is the 1970s, and St. Gall's are gradually beginning to find themselves as a football team. And what they needed was maybe a strong, steely half back who would be able to hold the team together. And in brother Pat Kelly, they had that particular man, you know. And as you say, he was there. He was very much involved. He was involved in working with young people in the club as well. And then when he had completed his training as a teacher there, he was moved on elsewhere. I think he was eventually moved down to Skibbereen or thereabouts, where sadly he died there in the late 80s or thereabouts. Died as a young man, in actual fact. But certainly, he in a sense... And I come back to, I'll be coming back to maybe to this again. His relationship with Kerry football, and in particular, obviously being the brother of Sean, who at that time was, I think, chairman of the Kerry County Board. Would I be correct? He was chair, and subsequently chairman of the Munster Council. St. Gall's were opening a pitch back in the 1980s or thereabouts, a new pitch, and they obviously wanted something. A good team to be playing there, and needless to say, they didn't have to look too far, because I think it was 1986 actually that they brought up the Kerry team. Mick O'Dwyer brought up a team to play against an Antrim select at that particular time,
and there's a lovely photograph in your book of that Kerry team, Tony.
There is indeed. There is, in it was 1988. We see actually of that particular team. I'm just looking at it here now in front of me as we talk here. Yes. And I see that Paddy O'Shea, for example, and Mick O'Dwyer was the manager at that particular time. And you had Charlie Nelligan there. And
Jack
Sean,
O'Shea.
Jack O'Shea and Sean Welch, that sort of thing, yes. One of the travelling companions on that particular day was a man that you knew extremely well and that you worked for years with, and a man called Liam Higgins.
Oh, not to mention him, yeah. He had been a selector on that team.
He was a selector on that team, is right. And after the match was played anyway, and we all sort of came into the dressing room afterwards, and there was tea and coffee and drinks and all that in St. Gall's new club. And I happened to be standing on my own for a moment or so, and this man said to me, "Jesus, is there any chance I'd be able to get an old drink down in Belfast tonight?" And the man who was speaking to me was a man called Paddy O'Shea. And I said, "Paddy, you're very lucky, because in actual fact, this is, I think, about the second Sunday that the pubs were open in Belfast, because there was a tradition, we see over the years, that pubs in the north of Ireland didn't open at all on a Sunday, yeah. You know, the strong Presbyterian ethic which involved there. So anyway, I said, "Paddy, yes, the pubs are open tonight at 7 o'clock. And he said, "Geez, I'd love to go down." So I said, "I have a car outside here now, and if you can get a few of your friends and we'll head on down." So into my car, anyway, piled Charlie Nelligan, Sean Welch, a young fellow at that particular time called John Joe Sheehy. I think he was on the verge of the Kerry team, and Liam Higgins. And we had we travelled the hostelries of Belfast for the next 3 or 4 hours anyway, and probably the less said about that the better. And we eventually arrived back in St. Gall's club at 10:30 at night. Now, Kerry had done something I think was the first time they'd actually flown from one end of the country to the other to play a match. They had flown from Fanfore Airport that morning, and there was a plane waiting for them at 11 o'clock in Belfast International Airport, and it was now 10:30, and Mick O'Dwyer was getting very ratty at this particular stage, you know, that the four or five of his best players hadn't arrived back, but into the door they came anyway, and into the middle of the floor, and Paddy was asked to sing, and you could nearly guess what he launched
on Puckerbiller.
And Puckerbiller gunned out her down and took the place down, of course, as only he could. But the aside of that particular story anyway is that I was a persona non grata in Senegal's club for quite a few years afterwards, because I had taken all these famous people away for the night.
Talking about songs though, what's your second choice of music?
My second choice of music has a Kerry connection as well. It's if you can find something about that Christy Moore sings about that song there. Is it Right or Left for Gibraltar? What tack do we take for missing head? And there's a few people in Boherby that'll know what I'm talking about when they hear that one.
You're very welcome back to this pre-recorded programme. I'm talking to Tony Welch, a Corkman who spent all his life up on the Falls Road in Belfast. He's after writing a fabulous book, From Clonard to Croke Park, The Story of St. Gall's GAA Club from 1910 to 2010, which incidentally, of course, won the McNamee Award as the best club history in Ireland. Tony, the Falls Road in St. Gall is the one thing you associate in association with these there is the so-called Troubles and the hunger strikes. I have no doubt it must have impinged on the club, and there must have been people in the club involved in the Troubles, and it must have had an impact on your life and on the life of your club.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. But any club located on the Falls Road during that particular period was very much in the cockpit of the Troubles. Now, one of the things that people kind of have to understand about football and club football and the GAA in Belfast in particular is that it is not parish related. And you could walk the length of the Falls Road, maybe two or 3 miles down the Falls Road, and in that stretch of 2 or 3 miles, you could have up to maybe 10 or 12 GAA clubs. And indeed, if you walked 100 yards, you could actually maybe find three different GAA clubs. Now, and they were obviously very much involved in the Troubles right through, in that they're playing members, many of whom were some of the clubs were actually attacked. Some of the clubs were bombed, sectarian bombing. And many of the individuals themselves, I suppose we would have to say this, would have maybe a direct, if not an indirect, involvement in the struggle as they saw it themselves as well. Now, St. Gall's, for people who don't know it, St. Gall's would have been located just maybe just about a mile or so up from the centre of the Falls Road in a place called Milltown, in actual fact beside Milltown Cemetery. If anybody ever goes to Milltown Cemetery, as I said already, and they look left, if they're standing in the middle of the cemetery, they'll see St. Gall's Club on the left-hand side. And they were just slightly removed in the sense that they weren't actually, I suppose, in danger of being involved on a day-to-day basis. But nevertheless, they drew their playing members from people who came from the streets, which were burnt out at various stages. There's a man in particular, a man called Mickey Culbert, who grew up in a street, and it's one of the iconic images of the Troubles is in a place in a street called Bombay Street, which was burnt. It's actually a street next to the Shankill Road, and that street was completely burnt out. And I have a story in the book there about Mickey going back and looking at the burnt out street where his family had been born and reared and grown up and so on, and him searching through it and seeing what bits and pieces were left of. Now, Mickey was probably, he was just 20 or thereabouts at that particular stage. This is 1969, in the middle of all the Troubles. And the same Mickey would have gone on in the afternoon and start training for the under 21, which was coming up. And leaving the particular site of seeing all that was familiar to you burned to the ground, and having to go home And put on your training gear and go up and start training the afternoon for an under 21 All Ireland, which was coming up in a couple of weeks' time. And the same Mickey and a man called Joe Dowds and Jerry Pollock, all three of them, they went on and they played for Antrim, who beat Roscommon in the All Ireland of 69 or thereabouts. Dermot Early actually was playing midfield for Roscommon at that particular time. So it is one of the great ironies, Weishi, of this particular thing, that the troubles were there daily and nightly, yet sport continued on unabated right through.
Now, going on to the hunger strikes then, that had a direct bearing on the St. Gall's Club, hadn't it?
It did indeed, yes. It had a very direct bearing on it in actual fact, because one of the members one of the people involved in the hunger strike, it was a man called Pat Sheehan. In actual fact, he's the present MLA, that's a member of the Legislative Assembly for West Belfast. And Pat spent 55 days on the hunger strike. And Pat, in actual fact, was the next person, I suppose, if you wanted to die before the hunger strike was called off. Pat Sheehan, I've referred to the Sheehans already. His grandfather had come from Buttevant in County Cork and settled in Belfast and was involved in the founding of St. Gall's Club. And as I say, he was involved directly in the hunger strike and got through it. But one of the things I'd like to say about that, Weishi, is that St. Gall's in particular, there was a danger that the GAA clubs might have become, I suppose, less GAA, and to put it bluntly, more Republican. And the St. Gall's were very lucky in that they had a committee, a very strong committee, and to have Brother Spillane, whom I've referred to already, who held the club together and believed in the principles of the GAA first. Yes, they were Irish. Yes, there was Republican, but the GAA came first. And that is one of the hallmarks of St. Gall's Club. And it's possibly one of the reasons why, you know, they reached the pinnacles for which they have reached in the last few years or so.
Unless, of course, Tony, you have very strong personalities in clubs, the clubs can take the wrong directions, can't they? And it could have happened in Newport. Now, also in the book, I've noticed, there's a letter concerning the hunger strikes that was smuggled out of the prison, isn't there?
There is, yes. Well, that actually sort of predates the hunger strike. In actual fact, it's written again by the guy that I referred to earlier, Mickey Culbert, and it's written from Longkish, and he's hoping, he's hoping against hope that St. Gall's were playing in the county final, their first county final, probably in 40 years or thereabouts, and he would have been one of the star performers on the team, and he wasn't there to experiencing it, but he wrote to his friend PJ O'Hare, wishing him all the best for. And it is, and to get the letter out now, I don't know the details of how it was smuggled out. There were lots of stories told about how things came out of prisons at that particular time. But we won't go too much into that particular thing. But yes, it was part and parcel of the fact that you had people, not just from St. Gall's, but many other clubs as well, who were in Longkish prison. And who were, in a sense, had hoped that they were elsewhere, and that in particular was the case in relation to that letter which was smuggled out at that time.
Tony, before we go for the break, around that time, and the time of the troubles and the hunger strike and all that, would St. Gall's have been a predominantly Catholic club? How did you manage between Catholics and Protestants in relation to membership and playing membership of your club?
The very simple answer to that, Weishi, in that there would have been no Protestant involvement. Belfast is very much a divided city, I suppose, less so nowadays. But the GAA clubs, and certainly any GAA club on the Falls Road, was totally and completely Catholic. There was no, hands across the border or hands across the peace walls or anything as far as that was concerned. No, Protestant didn't enter into the situation at all, because quite simply it was, you were drawing your clientele, you were drawing your playing group from the area in which you were, which was the Falls Road, which is totally Catholic.
And is it still the same?
It is still the same, though. In actual fact, It is still the same, but this year St. Gall's have been sponsored for the last couple of years, and in 2010 in particular, by a non-Catholic firm, put it as gently as that, who decided that they would put their hands across the political divide, and a company called McCullough Travel, and they wanted to sponsor two separate teams across the political divide in the north of Ireland. So they chose St. Gall's in football, and they chose Banbridge Rugby Club. And they have been extremely, obviously St. Gall's have been successful, but the sponsors have been extremely delightful, because they found their name up in lights in Croke Park and in media of all descriptions for the last number of years or so.
Yeah, they really struck it rich. Come here, being a Cork man and your final choice of music, surely to God you'll ask for a Cork song, Tony.
I will indeed. Anything by Sean O'Shea, Louis, or Wish You Would Do the Trick.
Yeah, you picked a great man, one of my favourites, a man who often appeared on my programmes. So sit back and listen to this song by Sean O'Shea. You're very welcome back to the final part of this pre-recorded programme. I'm talking to Tony Welsh, a Corkman who's been living up and involved in the St. Gall's Club on the Falls Road in Belfast all his life. He wrote a fabulous club history from Clonard to Croke, which won the McNamee Award last year. A fabulous book, I can tell you, over 300 pages, and it's well worth trying to seek out, but I don't know whether they're available now or not. But anyway, it's a fabulous book. Tony, congratulations on the McNamee Award, and congratulations on the club history. How long did it take you to do it, and why did you do it?
Thank you, Wishy. I suppose it was, first of all, it was a labour of love. I had played for the club back in the late 60s and early 70s. I'd managed the club for a couple of years. And I was asked by Sean McGurty, a very prominent member of the St. Gall's Club, a man I had taught history 2 years beforehand. I was a history teacher for most of my life. And he asked me, would I do this because the centenary was coming up, and they were doing various kind of projects for the centenary. And he said, maybe you'd write the history of it. And I kind of tried to put him off at first. But then I said, you know, it's something to put back into the club. And I had a go at it. And I worked for 2 years, Wishy, on the job. Now, it was very interesting. A lot of the material which I would have kind of liked to have used, a lot of it had disappeared over the years. I came sort of late enough to it. Now, I was able to sort of find material in probably the last 25 or 30 or 40 years or thereabouts, but material dating back to the early time was difficult enough to find. But I was lucky in that a man called F.J. McCarraher, who wrote for the Irish News, which is the daily newspaper, one of the two daily newspapers in Belfast. F.J. McCarraher was a founder member of St. Gall's back in 1910. And he then became a journalist for this Irish News newspaper, which is still published. And he was the sports reporter for the Irish News. And he covered every single game that St. Gall's was ever involved in. And it didn't matter whether they scored 10 points or no points or 3 points, or whether they won or whether they lost. They got full coverage in the Irish News on a week-to-week basis. And that served as a great opportunity for me to work at that particular story, especially the early years.
Yeah, from Clonard to Croke, I tell you, fabulous production. Well done and congratulations. As I said, I won the McNamee Award last year. Of course, the big thing was St. Gall's winning the All-Ireland Club Championship. Massive thing. But it wasn't their only time going very close to it, because this particular St. Gall's team now had been tipping around before they won the All-Ireland, Tony.
They had indeed, yes, absolutely, and they had in 2006 they beat Nemo in the semi final, and were so delighted with winning the semi final that in a sense it became their All Ireland wish, you know. But anyway, they went on to play Salt Hill Knocknacara in the club final in Croke Park in 2006. On the coldest St. Patrick's Day I can ever remember, in actual fact. I think that the temperature on that particular day was colder than the North Pole. They were beaten by a point. And They were a team that in actual fact had won, that first won an Ulster Club Championship back in 83, and they had won again in 2003 or thereabouts, and then they had, as I say, won in 2006 an Ulster Club Championship. And as a result of strong management, now they, one of the things that they weren't afraid of was to bring in an outside manager. So they had a guy called John Rafferty there from who played for Armagh, who happened to be teaching in the De La Salle School in Belfast. And John managed them for 2 or 3 years, and he took them to the 2006 All-Ireland Final. And then he kind of dropped aside, and a guy from Castlewellan in County Down, a man called Pat, I forget his name there. Anyway, he looked after them, and then James McCartan, from who managed the Down team last year, he managed them for a year or so, and then finally, they were lucky to come across an ex-player of theirs called Lenny Harbinson, who had kind of just retired from his work, and he put together a background team and a management team that brought them to the All-Ireland Final. Now, the very same year, and this I think is unique, Weishi, in that most of these guys would have been hurlers as well. And in 2010, they won the Ulster Intermediate Hurling Championship and went on to play against a Galway team in the All-Ireland semi-final and qualified for the All-Ireland final in late February of 2010. And six or seven of that hurling team were also footballers who would go on in St. Patrick's Day to win for the footballers. But that hurling team played, as I say, in February of 2010 in Croke Park and were well beaten. They were well beaten by St. Lactans of Freshford, who had the likes of Michael Kavanagh and Noel Hickey and Kilkenny senior players playing for them.
Would you say St. Gall's is a big club or a small club, Tony?
St. Gall's is a big club. By any standards, it's a big club. So it is. And it's a club which has huge involvement with young people and in many different forms. You know, they develop them right through. They're lucky enough, they have a fine pitch and they have a fine club rooms and so on. So they're very much into developing youth.
I must refer to one picture in the book that I was studying, and it's a picture of a basketball team and one young man that died suddenly, but he'd have a kind of an indirect connection with Killarney because he was playing a Killarney team that night. Isn't that right?
That's right. A man called John Kennedy. John Kennedy was an international basketballer. He, St. Gall's, as well as having, as I say, a hurling team and a football team, they also had a basketball team. And St. Gall's basketball teams would have been playing in the All-Ireland League in basketball. And one of the highlights of when you were a St. Gall's basketballer team was to travel to Killarney, and they always had a great weekend and they had some great matches with Killarney. And I think John was the captain of the team and the manager of the basketball team, and they were playing an All-Ireland League match against Killarney in Andersonstown Leisure Centre. And at half time, John took the team aside and was giving the halftime talk. And just at the beginning of the second half, as just after the tip-off, John collapsed and died in the centre of the basketball court. And I think he would have been a great friend now of a man, is it Paddy O'Connor, I think, yes?
Paddy O'Connor, who's known in America, great Killarney man, and was probably, he was the only Irish basketball player ever to have played in a European All-Star basketball team. One of the great basketball players. They were great friends. Tony, out of the book and out of your involvement with St. Gall's, what's your one most pleasing, abiding, longing memory that you have? I would imagine I could nearly answer it.
Oh, I think it was, and I'm actually located here in the picture. It's St. Cogardicus, St. Gall's All-Ireland Senior Club Champions 2010. When that went up on the scoreboard in Croke Park, I knew that they had made it. And that definitely would be my abiding memory, without a doubt in the world.
Listen, Tony, it was lovely talking to you. As a matter of fact, we could have stayed talking until the cows come home. We were only scratching the surface, but it's a great insight into St. Gall's club up there in Belfast. Belfast, and your club history from Clonard to Croke that won the McNamee Award last year. It is a superb production, beautifully coloured, lovely black and white photos, over 300 pages. Thanks for talking to me.
Thank you, Mishi. Thank you very much indeed.